Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Echoes in the Dark. The darkness within each of us needs an opportunity to be heard, understood, and embraced. So whether it comes in the form of a whisper or a scream, we will carry forth the poetry that expresses the haunting echoes within your soul. I am Pam Ray, and co-hosting with me tonight is Afaziana. Afazi and I are poets on a website called All Poetry, with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. Now, tonight is our dark poetry show, and if you find that is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Afazi. How's it going? Are you on mute or stepping away? Let me check.
I was on mute. Hello.
Oh, okay. Whenever I ask that question, I'm usually looking at the studio. So then I think, well, maybe I should go jump over to Late Night Poets in case, you know, the person said something like, be right back or something, you know. Yep. And so that intro song was The Wild Hunt, and I'm going to butcher this name, but by a band called Ethereum Odinsjocks, which obviously have to do with Odin. They're they're a Viking band, you know, like basically a lot of what they do really connects with the Nordic legends and mythology, a lot of their music, and so, which was perfect for tonight's topic.
I recognize some of the instruments they were using as ones that the band Wardruna uses, and they are also kind of Viking influenced, do a lot of kind of mythic, old school, Icelandic stuff, and they use all traditional instruments, but they're like a heavy metal band at the same time. I saw them live, and it was so cool seeing their instruments. They're all very unusual looking.
Oh, that is really cool. Yes, they probably do have very, similar styles, I'm sure. I probably even saw the other band because there was more than one of the Nordic mythology bands that did like a hard rock or heavy metal type thing. I went with this one just because I really liked the rhythm of it. I have to admit, I couldn't completely understand the words, but that's okay. You know, I figured it had something to do with the wild hunt. But, I am glad to know that you have been feeling slightly better, that you took some time to take care of yourself. And, that is really good, really good. So, I kind of had a feeling Rex wasn't going to make it tonight because by the end of – we did a show last night. Usually we have our After Midnight show on Tuesday at 12:30 a.m., but we couldn't do it. And so we moved it to Thursday at 12:30 a.m., and he was yawning by the end of last night, and he's like – he mentioned something about having a show in a few hours, like at 10 p.m. today, and I'm like, well, we both have a show later than that, and I was like, well, what day is it? I'm like, Thursday? So, yeah, I just had a feeling with him as yawning as much as he was last night that he was getting some much, much needed sleep. So,
well, I slept all day, so I'm awake now.
Good. Well, I'm glad you got a chance to sleep all day, and honestly, I think this is going to be a topic right up your alley. So, you know, I think it's definitely a good night to have you on. I do technically have two contests. The first one is the topic was The Wild Hunt. And then the next topic was a painting done called the Last Day of Pompeii. But I ended up getting, you know, I have a tendency to misjudge, think a contest isn't going to do well or isn't doing well, start a second one, and then the next thing I know, the first one picks up. So, we might not get into the Last Day of Pompeii rights, but that is all right because they can just be saved for the next day, and or not the next day, but the next Echoes in the Dark show, which will be April 5th. And if we have need them, well, they're on the board. So, but a little bit about tonight's topic. I think most people are aware of the mythology of the wild hunt. But just to give everybody a better idea, it is one of the most widespread motifs in European folklore. Throughout is mostly the wild hunt was a potent, and I am reading this from a online article, a portent of catastrophe and would bring death to those unlucky enough to witness it. It is a belief existed in folklore that a group of spectral riders went forth at night. It was typically headed by recognizable figures, and while Odin is most commonly named as its head, local variations of the hunt name many gods and heroes and even historical figures as leaders of the hunt. While it is usually identified with Germany and Scandinavia, the wild hunt was believed to ride throughout most of Europe. Each country and often each town had its own version of what the hunt was and how to survive it. And I didn't put up a whole lot of prompts simply because, you know, I gave people the option to just write poetically on the topic, but I put up like four different paintings, and then I put up a classic poem called The Wild Hunt, which is what we are going to start this show out with. So I put up The Wild Hunt by Johannes Carsten Hauch. And Faisy, would you be nice enough to give us a read, that a read for us?
The Wild Hunt by Johan Carsten Hauch. When they thought that Denmark's king soundly in the graveyard slumbered, words incredible unnumbered through the land crept whispering. Rumor said the king hunts nightly stag and doe on Sjelland's isle with a company unsightly through the country mile on mile. They saw the child at the head of his hosts. In the moonlight they heard the racket of his train of terrible shadows and ghosts with the hawk and the sable bracket. Fables deep in time's abyss, from oblivion resurrected, champions in their rest ejected from the dim necropolis. Women from their hidden prison, heathen kings from the sepulchre, all the peasants said had risen forth to ride with Valdemar. Like wings the sound over woods was born. In terror the dwarf dug deeper, while overhead a mad hunting horn aroused the horrified sleeper. Volmer's eyes with anguish blazed, never found he rest and quiet. Ever in this awful riot must he hurry on half-crazed. Nearest him, of all the shadows, coursing over lake and glade, through the night mists of the meadows, was a pale and slender maid. Her long hair flickered in the midnight blast. She sighed with sighs inhuman. On snow-white horse she galloped fast, the fairest of all women. Over castle and lofty house, falcon, raven, birds of evil, unknown fowl from night primeval, fat, enormous flittermouse. Over forests, fields, and ditches, clustering pallid flare on flare, wolves with 100 feet and witches sailed the river of the air. The hunter's shouts, the thunder's crash, roared high in the lust of slaughter through horses' whinnies, the snap of the lash above the livid water. Just before them, roe and hart flew as if on hidden pinions from the ghost king and his minions, cleaving the slow mists apart. At their head, there flitted, leading, tall and white, a wounded hind, struck with many arrows bleeding, shaking the midnight wind. The peasants, who saw the chase sweep by, swore to all would hear it, that the hunted hind's wild eye, there peered Queen Helvig's spirit. As in enchanted space, trees stood in the vapor rootless, while the stag flew onward, footless, yet unwearied by the chase. Then the black snake coursed the meadow, the red dragon rose unwombed, while the storm wailed like a shadow to eternal anguish doomed. The full moon, bleeding troll, unheeding the earth's ire, cruelly charmed each tortured soul from the abyss's fire. Often, when the autumn brought wheeling gusts of phosphorescence, in this dismal chase the peasants whispered, pallid and distraught, Save us, Christ and Maid of Heaven, from this evil and thy grace, by thy grace. Save us from this infernal leaven. Save us, 'tis King Volmer's chase. They thought that his doom was sealed for aye, by no prayers to be diminished, to hunt until the last judgment day, till world and time were finished. And
oh, bravo, Daisy. What a wonderful read of that epic poem. And, you know, I do love a good epic fantasy poem, I have to say. I couldn't resist putting this up, though people don't tend to write to entire poems, but when I put a poem up, I usually tend to tell people they can write to any part of the general vibe. But this is just great all the way through. A fine example of a romanticism classic poem on the topic of the wild hunt. And I won't read it all, but there is a great analysis beneath the poem that says, that mentions that the atmosphere is one of mystery and dread, and the poem is characterized by its vivid imagery and brisk narration, creating a sense of urgency and unease. It also says that it reflects the romantic period's fascination with the supernatural and the irrational. It draws upon ancient myths and legends to create a unique and compelling narrative. That's what AI has to say. And most time I disagree with AI, but, you know, in that case, I can't completely disagree. I think it is spot on. I should say I disagree with AI when it comes to my own poetry. But I also like that, I don't know. I just think because for most people who know mythology, the wild hunt is so well known, and there is such a variation on it throughout many European countries. I think it's always just both fascinating, and I don't know if comforting is the right word, but familiar to read a poem like this or listen to a poem like this being read. And Faisy, did you have any thoughts that you'd like to share on this classic poem?
Yes. Well, I love the vocabulary in it. Even instead of saying, graveyard, it's necropolis, which adds so much to it, because then you imagine, the big tombs and the fancy statues, and it sounds so fancy. It's like, I don't know, I love necropolis. And even, so I can't say it properly, sepulcher. Which is another kind of fancy grave, or rather not fancy. It's a cave generally, but it makes it so much more engaging to have that language. And then just a giggle a little bit at overhead a mad hunting horn, because, well, I hang out with some guys who are super into Norse things and live with one, and we have our own hunting horn made by a friend, a real horn, and it is quite vocal when you blow it correctly, and we'll go on hikes and blow that horn, and people tend to be startled as a bunch of us Vikings run about having heard the horn and find each other. But
that's my people.
But I'm totally the bad guys in this, because it's like they're afraid of the people with the hunting horn, and the ravens are evil, and I'm like, these are my people.
Yep.
I'd be the one in the hunt. I just have to giggle, because I'm the spooky one. This is really well done. One thing about it is it seems like it steals from a lot of different cultures. So it's not like one thing, whereas Odin's Hunt tends to be the Norse one, and there's various different places that have their own version of it. And this one I felt like took things from a whole bunch of them, and I don't know them all super well separately, but I couldn't quite pinpoint exactly what culture he's taking from, because there's a few different ones, I think. So I feel like he had a broad understanding of the Wild Hunt and took little bits and pieces from all over the place, you know, as writers do.
Oh, Yep. I could definitely see that, you know, especially because, you know, he mentions Odin, and then at near the end mentions Christ and the Maid of Heaven, which I'm guessing to be, of course, a reference to Mary, the mother of Christ. And then there's a whole bunch, like, just like you, I don't know it all, in between, that you can tell makes references to a variety of cultures. So very cool. Great observations there, Paisley. All right. And now we'll go ahead and get into our contest entries. And I've put up The Ride in the Darkness by Greg Milhorn. And it goes like this. Suddenly, without warning, towards skies so fair, ferocious clouds boiling and swirling in air, they ride in the darkest of night. Their horses' hoofs thunder with flashes of light. The hunters thirst to butcher and maim as the hordes ride forth in Odin's name. They are swift as their swords crash down, splitting skulls open, blood soaks the ground. Stay away from the forest, doors locked tight. Only fools or brave try to see the strange sight. In the mountain villages, wolfsbane did gloom. The hunter's wolf dogs caused destruction and doom. Throats ripped and bloody clothes soaked red, as poisonous wolfbane's pretty flowers do spread. The death bell rings, bodies ooze pus and blood. Throw the dead in the carts rolling on roads of mud. Clickety-clack, clickety-clack, the same haunted sound as their evil ravens circle where no peace is found. Eternal war screams heard to roam with no ending. Chains bound them tonight and forever ascending. Suddenly, without warning, towards skies so fair, ferocious clouds boiling and swirling in air. They ride in the darkness of night. Their horses' hoofs thunder with flashes of light. End poem. And Faisy, your thought on this amazing poem.
I thought this was really well done. It set the tone very well. It had, you know, the right kind of vocabulary for it. Once again, it does a good job at just describing the sky, which makes sense because the Wild Hunt tends to come from the storm. And I mean, that's partly because, like most mythology, was used to explain situations like, oh, there are big storms at this time of year, and people tend to like die in various ways of like the lightning struck or the flooding happened or various things like that. And they're like, oh, it must have been something mythical that caused this to happen all over the place. So that it has the clouds and all of the stormy kind of thing, like the swords crashing, that sound is like the thunder. It makes sense, and I think it was really well described here. I like it as ferocious clouds boiling. It's like they're bubbling up in anger. That's a really good description of that. Like not just dogs, but not quite wolves, the wolf dogs, is good. And it works right after talking about the wolf's bane, the plant. Talking again about that, it's talking about the poison of the pretty. So they're beautiful but deadly, and that makes wolfsbane really fun to write about because it's both. and I have that morbidness where I love things that are beautiful and deadly at the same time. And then it has, like, the onomatopoeia of the clickety-clack, 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 which I can just get stuck in a loop and do that forever. That's good. I wasn't reading it. Yeah, I thought this was really well done. Again, the ravens are called evil, which makes me so sad because, I mean, they were his ears and his eyes, but they were not, they're not evil.
This is very true. I think it just adds, I guess, for people an extra layer of darkness. And oftentimes we think of, I think people think of ravens as messengers of death. And yeah, and unfortunately we sometimes end up killing the messenger, not literally, but in a metaphorical way. But yeah, I did really like what you had to say. And it is true, like a lot of ancient cultures and religions needed to understand nature, especially things like storms that were so powerful and scary in the moment. And it oftentimes was connected with God. You know, like even Odin himself, it was said that he brought, you know, thunder and lightning and, you know, so yeah, I really thought Greg did a great job with this. He attached the painting that was in the contest to his poem, and it was a painting done by Peter Nikolai Arbel. But the thing is with Greg's right, it works well with the painting. Like, you can definitely see the inspiration, but at the same time, the way he paints with his words, with his word choices and his rhyme and flow, you can definitely have it stand on its own without the painting. And I like that. I really like this all the way through. There's some great lines. I like the use of the word hordes. As the hordes ride forth in Odin's name, they are swift as their swords crash down, splitting skulls open, blood soaks the ground. And I did also like the use of the hunter's wolf dogs, because it takes you back to a more ancient time when dogs, especially dogs that lived within a nomadic society of any kind, were more likely to be more closely related to wolves. And the mention of the wolf's bane, the idea that while all this darkness is going on, there's this beauty offered up, but even the beauty itself is poisonous. And yeah, I like how this connects well with a catastrophic event of nature, like a storm, and brings us into an ancient culture where, you know, nature is feared, death is feared, and the explanations come from that which that people are able to connect to, which is oftentimes their own beliefs and stories passed around. I also like the repetition of "they ride, they ride." I thought that worked really well to like almost like to emphasize the moving forward of the hunt. So very cool, epic write, and by Greg Milhorn, and very well done. All right, let's see what we have next. Up next we have Chinny Chin Chin by Neutron Bomb. And go ahead please, Faizy, and give that a read.
Chinny Chin Chin by Neutron Bomb. Words escape like the bleat of sheep bludgeoned with stick and sharpened rock, harpooned to quench the stomachs of an enclave of warriors, battle-weary from the encumbered weight of whispers stacked high to protect frostbitten toes. Pelts are fashioned from roadkill, and mercury treated to render the hide soft. Sharp tongues escape the savage knife that seeks to cut them from the mouths of sheep. Prey are taught to roam, leaving the stragglers behind, to be felled by the wolf who blew that straw shack down. The hairs on my chinny chin chin are thick with icicles as I sew his belly shut. Rocks of manifestation cloaked in gelatinous velvet slow his traverse down rabbit holes and through the sty of pigs. Bricks of clay are forged in a kiln. Solitude affords my craft. The words will come like osmosis through the length of intestine strapped to my drum, beating ancestral roots into the barren ground with a mallet. Tent pegs hold tarpaulin and pelts across my home till Grandma is freed from her flesh and bone prison. End poem.
Great read there, Faisy. And what an amazing write by Neutron Bomb. I'm really glad she was inspired. Her imagery and metaphors are always just brilliant. And to me, I mean, I really like how she did take us into what seems to be a metaphorical direction and puts a twist on some familiar stories. Chinny Chin Chin is the three pigs and the wolf and the wolf going, little pigs, let me in. And not by the hair of our chinny chin chins. Like, I like that reference. I like how the rabbit holes to me is the reference to Alice in Wonderland. And then, at the very end, Grandma is freed from her flesh and bone prison, the reference to the grandmother and Little Red Riding Hood. And I like how as you get to that end and you look back and you realize this story is, told in the voice of a woman who is like Little Red Riding Hood, who has this connection to family, who I think also it's a representation of women throughout history who have served as warriors, who have been the protector of the home and the protector and the keeper of the mysteries and the magic and the manifestations and the stories that are passed down from generation to generation. I like the couplet by itself that says, pelts are fashioned from roadkill and mercury treated to render the hide soft. I find that fascinating because I'm sure obviously roadkill happened in ancient times, but I feel like it happens now more days with the faster cars and the fact that, oftentimes, that animals have to come into towns. There's just not enough country, not enough forest. And, like, I don't know about where other people live, but here, like, I live in town and you'll still see deers and bears and, squirrels, all kinds of animals crossing the road and, getting hit. But I also really like where she says, as I sew his belly shut, rocks of manifestation cloaked in gelatinous velvet. And I believe sewing the rocks into the belly had something to do with either Little Red Riding Hood or the three pigs and the wolf. I'm not sure. I recognize it, and I wish I had researched more. I'll have to do that before judging the contest. But it sounds very familiar. But I like how she calls it rocks of manifestation, as if the bravery and intelligence passed down from generation to generation manifests itself within that one act. And at least that's how I see it. I find it absolutely a fascinating write, layered with plenty of metaphor and imagery to chew upon. And Faisy, your thoughts?
Well, I'll start with that part about the belly sewn shut with the rocks of manifestation. So Norse witches were called Volva, and they were prophetesses and or wise women. The tended to be the single women, whether they chose it, almost like choosing to be a nun, or if they were kind of outcast, they would often become the Volva. And they would use stones and gems and precious rocks in their foretelling of things, and also pieces of bone. And they used animal parts quite a lot. So to sew those stones into the belly while making a manifestation makes perfect sense to me, because they'd be, you know, manifesting their thoughts. Like they would imagine what they wanted to happen as they rolled the rocks in the belly. So that is very much like a pagan ritual there. But I think it also could be referencing a fairy tale, and fairy tales most likely reference what actually was done in pagan rituals. The roadkill part actually kind of threw me off, because that did seem like a very modern thing compared to the rest of it. I mean, I suppose animals were killed on the roads, though they didn't have a whole lot of roads in like the time of where people worshipped Odin the most. But yeah, that part threw me off a little bit. I liked that it talked about like using all the different pieces, though, the hide and the meat to feed the warriors, the like the intestines were used, everything, because the people of that time would use everything. They didn't have very much, so every part of the animal was used. And I like that she combined that history with more modern references, such as Alice in Wonderland and The Three Little Pigs and Little Red Riding Hood. So she was playful with it while also kind of historical. And Grandma's freed from her flesh and bone prison. Yes, it works with Little Red Riding Hood, but it also is kind of like when someone passes away, then you're thinking about your ancestors, your ancestral roots it's talking about there. And I mean, the Wild Hunt was a time that people were taken away. And if you think about when the Wild Hunt is, I believe it's usually celebrated late November, early December, although some cultures do it in January. That was like the cold, wintry time when people tend to be sick. Just in general, that is a time when a lot of people get sick, and the elderly would often die during that time because they were, you know, immune sensitive, and it would be as if Odin came and took all of the grandparents. So this connects to that with me, because, you know, the grandmother would most likely be taken as the Wild Hunt was in the area.
Very cool. I am so glad you knew that. I knew this would be a great show to have you on, though, of course, I would have loved to have Rex, too, because he probably would have known that stuff. He's a pretty knowledgeable fella. But, yeah, that is very cool that you knew that about the rocks of manifestation and the reference to the vulva, is it? Or, yeah, some... But the seeress, or the, you know, the mythological woman of you know, a magic and fortune telling, and that is very cool. And yeah, there is a lot of great references in this, and great observations there. All right, let's see, vulva. All right, there we go. Yes, with the umlauts above the O. And all right. I know I saw something earlier about Robbie saying he might call in, but I'm guessing he ended up going off to bed or something because I haven't seen hide or hair of him. All right. Well, up next, we have The Mistress of Animals by J.W. Davidson. My mistress took her bow abroad, 3 dozen nymphs in tow, their quivers tied and feet unshod to better hunt the doe. When there she found a stag instead and let her arrow hiss, the target neither fought nor fled but bowed to Artemis. His antlers dug a shallow well with fits of furrowed pain, and as life filled the hole he fell to never rise again. Before he passed the lichen felt a prayer beneath his breath, my mistress, please remove this pelt and profit from my death. The goddess flung her knife aside, let fall her bow of yew, and kneeling near, she bathed his hide in beads of salted dew. End poem. And he was actually inspired by the poem The Wild Hunt by Johannes Karsten Hosch. And Faisy, your thoughts on this poem?
I thought this was really well done. Pardon me. I like the way that it talks about the archery. The specifics of like their quivers and that she ends up finding the stag and he neither fought nor fled but bowed. So it's like the fight or flight response, but no, he fawned despite not being a fawn. The stag fawned towards this goddess, which I thought was really good. He went with the Greek goddess of wild animals, which is fantastic. Artemis is amazing. But I had it in my head at first that it was going to be Skadi, who is the Norse goddess of bow hunting and winter. And I think most ancient mythologies have some kind of huntress who uses a bow because that's what they would have done. And as much as people stereotypically think the man would be the one doing it, the men were often away at war. The women had to be able to feed themselves and protect themselves. So I thought that he did a beautiful job here. He has the rhymes work nicely, please remove this pelt and profit from my death. Again, like in the other one, it's not just like, he's killed for fun. It is, we're going to hunt him for his meat and we're going to use his pelt to make the most of it. She bathes his hide in beads of salted dew. She's treating his sacrificed body with respect. And as much as the wild hunt is considered like a scary time, it also is about that they tend to take you to better places in various mythologies. Like Odin generally takes you to Valhalla, which is like where they want to go. So it depends on the perspective, and I thought he did this really beautifully.
Oh, I have to agree. Great comment there. And yes, definitely. I like the way he took this. I have to say J.W. Davidson is a pretty new name to me, so I'm glad to see a new name. I'm glad he was inspired, and I hope he does write for more of our shows. This has wonderful rhyme and flow. I, too, liked that he went with Artemis, though any one of the hunting goddesses would have worked well. But, yeah, Artemis is really cool, being the goddess of hunting wild animals and chastity. I liked this all the way through, and how it does, kind of like the classic poem itself, move at a fast pace, as we would expect up until the end, where there is that act of reverence. And I liked that. I liked the act of reverence because it is something that for many hunting cultures, whether you're talking like, you know, Native American or a variety of other hunting cultures throughout history, it's important to acknowledge the offering, the sacrifice made by the animal. I also like that he says, uses the word you, bull of you, because of the fact that you would, being as flexible as it was, and, you know, it was oftentimes used to make bows. And so I thought that was a great, clever reference. I think this works well also because it's mythology, and yet at the same time, it's the reality of hunting. His antlers dug a shallow well, with fits of furrowed pain, and as his life filled the hole, he fell to never rise again. And that's why it's so important, even in modern times, you know, not – for me anyways, you know, but I think it's important to not hunt just for the trophy, but rather to understand that, you know, this is an animal that's given their life, and so it should be, all of it should be used. So just an excellent write and very well done. All right. And... oh, I see Rex. All right. Well, you know what I'm going to do, Faisy, since I see Rex? I'm going to put up the next poem for you to read. And if you get done with it and I'm not back, go ahead and go straight into commenting, because I have to go into the green room to call him in. And it is Bring It On by Jacqueline H.
All right. Bring It On by Jacqueline H. As the twisted bodies writhe, with pain tormenting their ears, the stead with hot drool gallops towards me. Sorry, this, I'm going to start over again because I messed that up. As the twisted bodies writhe, with pain tormenting their ears, the steed with hot drool gallops towards me. They charge over my shoulder, and a stench of bloodiest metal catches in my throat as lumps of terror mists hang back and mask the scene that I know has been laid behind, destruction swallowed by the anguish of those waiting to feel the cold steel of a blade with no conscience. I stand firm, staring into the black hole of those eyes, eyes that eat at my soul but cannot destroy the want. Bring it on. Let me guide that scabbard into this warm, beating heart. You were never as alive as this. I take pleasure from swallowing power, from the evil monstrosity that comes. End poem. Pam, are you back? I'm going to take that as a no. Okay, so I thought this was a very exciting, action-filled poem, and it definitely grasped our attention. It has the suspense, and it engages your senses. It's, you can imagine the feel of the drool, the stench. It has all of the different senses engaged here. You can hear it, you can see it, you can smell it. The only part that bothered me was it was stabbing a scabbard into the heart. And a scabbard wouldn't be used to stab because that's what you put your dagger in. It's like the holder for the holster for your blade. So I think if that wording was a little bit different, it could be like the heart became the scabbard. That line didn't quite work for me. But otherwise, I thought this was really exciting and well done. Pam, are you back?
I am, and Rex is with us. So welcome, Rex. Glad you could be here.
Hello. Hey, Paisley.
Did you hear me talking about what a knowledgeable man you are and thought, you know what, I really should call in? She calls me knowledgeable.
I haven't heard anything except my own voice.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. And of course, Faizy, I'm glad you're here too. And I'm sure you did a wonderful read and comment on that because you always do. But I was in the green room with it took three tries to get Rex on with some technical issues. But, you know, but I have to say that interesting title. And you know, the fascinating thing is I feel like quite a few people in this contest took the topic of the wild hunt the in different directions and often in directions that I wouldn't think to take it. I liked her imagery in this. I liked her use of scabbard, which is definitely not like you don't think of it as, it's not a Norse thing, but the picture she used is different because I did put up like four different artworks. And so if you look at the artwork that she used with the guy on the black horse holding the sword is, you know, it's a thinner sword. So I can, you know, see it, her getting from that picture, using scabbard, and which I'm probably slightly mispronouncing. But
no, but that's funny because if you didn't hear my comment, I was thrown off by the scabbard part because she's using it to stab, and it, the sword is not a scabbard. The scabbard is the, like, holder for the sword. So the,
oh,
and that part
okay.
didn't make sense to
well,
me because the scabbard is like
know.
A holster.
Oh, I didn't. Okay, wow. Well, I am so glad you're here to tell me that because I would have just took it as a sword, you know? I mean, wow. Well, there you go. I guess me and Jacqueline H. have both learned something new that we better, if I'm ever in a sword fight, I'm just going to get laughed at if I try to stab with my scabbard. So, all right. Good to know. I do like how visceral the imagery is in this, though. And when she says, and a stench of bloodiest metal catches in my throat as lumps of terror mist hang back and mask the scene. I like the bloodiest metal because it just not only makes me think of the idea that, like, during a battle or a hunt, you know, the idea that the weapons themselves are covered with blood, but how blood itself has a very coppery taste to it. And it's almost like when he says, or when she says, you know, catches in my throat, you almost feel like the person is internally bleeding or bleeding, you know, down to their throats, like, and that they're tasting the copper taste of that blood. Also, great use of the word monstrosity that comes. And I like that, you know, it works to end the poem like that because I feel like with an ending like that, that you can leave it as is and it builds up it allows the reader to fill in the blanks of what that monstrosity is. But it also allows for the continuation of the story. So excellent dark write and very well done. And Rex, did you have an opportunity to read that one?
This is, the picture itself, I'm guessing that's death on the black horse itself. And you're right, the scabbard is not the sword. It's the sheath that holds the sword that hangs at the waist. So that threw me a bit. But the idea, this is someone who is staring down death in the moment, knowing what's coming, because you get the words that catches in my throat as lumps of terror right there, this fear. Miss hang back and mass the scene that I know has been laid behind. Destruction swallowed by the anguish of those waiting to feel the cold steel of a blade with no conscience, the implication of death coming. I stand firm, staring into the black hole of those eyes again. Death, eyes that eat of my soul, but cannot destroy the want. Bring it on. There's a sense of strength right there, despite the fear and the idea of let me guide that scabbard, which should have been the sword itself, I guess, into this warm beating heart. But there is no warm beating heart within that notice of what you're staring into. There's a cold brutality, because it is all about, in the moment, it is about you wield the power of the sword with death, or you actually die at its hands. So the idea is you need to take pleasure in that moment, swallowing and tasting the blood in the moment, because you're going to be splattered with it, and you have to let that fear mold into the strength. And you look back at the Knights Templar when they were doing battle in Jerusalem and the Middle East. They stood firm against hundreds, so that a good portion of their crew at least get away to the next fort. And they stood there and stood strong. No fear, just that knowledge and strength within their arms, their blades, and the wealth of power they got from knowing what they knew. So this comes at that moment of watching death come, yet standing strong against it.
I like that. I like that. Very cool. And I like your reference to death, because, you know, death is obviously very connected with the mythology of the Wild Hunt, as it was oftentimes spectral riders. And oftentimes it was believed that somebody who witnessed the Wild Hunt would end up dying. So that definitely has a great connection with the theme of tonight, and also with the artwork itself, as you could often picture death riding on a black horse. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and I'll put up the next right, Rex, which will be the story of the three witches by Blue Right 76, and I'm going to have you read that. But then if you want to go ahead and take over after that, posting links and assigning leaders, that would be great. All right, so here we go. All right, so we have the story of the three witches by Blue Right 76. And go ahead, Rex.
The story of the three witches by Blue Right 76. Moonless night at hearts, elusive sleep, heavy spirits, whispers at the window pane, then some knocks and creaks. The devil raged through the night, lightning came and slunk away, a glimpse alone of the carnage. The thunders bellowed together. Cows and bulls now disturbed, then silence fell at the owl's hoot. Then we sat glued to the glass, like ghosts looking for ghosts. Her long hair flickered in the midnight blast. She sighed with sighs inhuman. On snow-white horse she galloped fast, the fairest of all women. Three more auburn tresses, together they flew on black hooves. Cry of the cursed did burst then, as they looked at our abode. To find us in mother's abode, safe and sound like sleeping babes, we saw their eyes flash green, the hungry mites held hate. We slunk away, burnt and scared. What devil spawned such crew? The fair woman feared, we know, bloody her white dress and eyes. Then it was dawn many miles away. Then it was dawn many a while away. We walked and picked through our land and garden strewn, as if a dream we never did ask, because our old game speaker spoke of the dead fair woman now, to be put to rest at the moor by her auburn girls three. No one spoke of them lot, brewing their cauldrons alone, never to step into the village. We left sheep at their gates. The price the village paid to keep them unknown devils at forest shadow secluded, never to be touched and loved. Woods and winds their mother grew in solitude sneers and herbs. 60 winters later, one dark day, Macduff and Macbeth came riding by. And boom.
Great read, Rex. And what an amazing write by Blue Write 76. I'm glad they were inspired. This had a really nice flow to it. Despite that it wasn't a rhyming poem, but there was something in the way she placed her lines and the way that the word choices that I thought really added to a nice flow. With that title, like I read that this earlier today, and even before I got to her A-N, I automatically thought of the three witches of Macbeth in Macbeth, and how those characters in that play or story. And then I got to her A N, and she'd actually put a part of by Macbeth and in there, which was her long hair flickered in the midnight blast. She sighed with sighs inhuman. On snow white horse, she galloped fast, the fairest of all women. And then she puts as a note, I have added this paragraph to make a poem as an answer for a question that always arose when I read Macbeth. Where did the witches come from? And I like that. I've actually been watching recently or rewatching the show Once Upon a Time on Hulu. And, you know, anybody who's seen that show knows that they take familiar fairy tale and story characters and, you know, they really get a lot into their backstories. And oftentimes the backstories are unexpected. The characters that you thought were truly good turn out to be not so much. And the ones you thought were evil turned out to be, you know, there was a reason they turned dark. Or, you know, there was something they went through, and oftentimes they had a good heart inside of them. But I like how she delves into the answer of, you know, where did these witches come from? Who were they before they were these three crones? I thought that was really cool. I really like, to find us in mother's abode, safe and sound like sleeping babes. We saw their eyes flash green, the hungry mites held hate. We slunk away, burnt and scared. What devil spawned such crew? The fair woman feared, we know, bloody her white dress and eyes. And I like the reference to the bloodiness and the white dress, because it makes me think of the ghost, the white woman, or there's a Spanish name for it, but basically it's that woman who gets killed and seeks revenge. Either she gets killed, or oftentimes she commits suicide because she finds that her lover's cheated on her, or her husband's cheated on her, or something like that, and she becomes this vengeful and hateful spirit. And so I like I liked her references to Macbeth and the three witches. I like the story that she's made up. But I also like how she references that vengeful spirit that goes on the hunt, not for an animal, but rather seeking that everlasting rest that comes when vengeance is finally fulfilled, which it never quite is. So very cool references in here. And Faizy, your choice. I mean, not your choice. I didn't say your choice. I don't know.
What is my choice?
Your thoughts.
Choose your own adventure. I really enjoyed this. I thought the language really like set us in a in the time and place. What my favorite part was the woods and winds their mother grew in solitude, sneers and herbs. That just sounded very witchy and awesome to me. And I like that it's sort of that they've been outcast. So not only does they're given the meat so they'll stay away, but never to be touched and loved. It points out that like they were neglected and kind of left to themselves. They grew up in solitude, sneers and herbs. Like the sneers really shows like that they were detested, and that's how they grew up, was that negativity. So of course they became, you know, aggressive hags, because if you're raised that way, that you're gonna want to fight back. That doesn't make sense to me. But I find it interesting that so many times witches come in threes, like the Norns, on Hocus Pocus. Like I often think of witches as coming in three. I don't know. Sorry, if that just side
no,
sidetrack
like
my.
I like that. I like that. Very cool.
Really
and I
good.
Think that, yeah, I think the witches coming through. Well, I think Hocus Pocus, because it's more modern, just copies the trend. But I think it's because there's that mysticism that three is supposed to be a number of meaning. Like even in biblical references, the number three, and in other religions and, you know, and cultures, the number three is a number that's supposed to have great significance and power. So I wonder if that has to do something with it. And I really like that you pointed out the part of, you know, with the sneers and, you know, the way they were treated and how, you know, because oftentimes you find when you seek answers for why somebody became the way they did, the answer goes back to how they were treated in their youth. So very cool observations there. And Rex, you did a fantastic read of that. Your thoughts?
It goes to light and dark. You got the Holy Trinity, so on the dark end, you have to have the evil Trinity, which is the three witches in this case, or it could be a reference to anything. It holds its importance on both ends. You have to have one to offset the other. Now, as far as it does mention, they weren't grown at that point. They were girls, so mother died early, never got to offer up the knowledge that she had to pass down. So the idea of them being shunned at that point, I guess the woman was feared for maybe just being the special one that everybody feared at that moment. And the three girls does offer up that note of what transpires later on, especially with the thought of Macduff and Macbeth come riding by some 60 years later. But they've had to learn on their own, and they were always seen as outcasts because of the thought that these three rode black hooves, as he writes. And the bite with the mom was on a snow white horse. She galloped fast. So that implies the thought that at one point, she might have been an easier note to what night brings, as opposed to what the three daughters end up representing, the dark end of what happens when, as Stacey put it, grew in solitude, sneers, and herbs, the idea that they were never loved, they were never catered to, they were never looked upon. They were left to their own devices out in the woods all those many years.
I like that. I like that. I particularly like that you, very cool comment, that you brought up the idea of the balance created between light and dark, the light trinity and the dark trinity. And I also like that you brought up the significance, you know, of the mother's absence and the effect that would have had on the young girls, which works really well for the story, but also works on the you know, the reality of life when a parent is missing. So excellent comment. Very cool. All right. And Rex, what do we have next?
Stampede into Freedom. Stampede into Freedom by Jenny the Deep. And that one's yours.
All right. Lurking in the swampy shadows, violent hunters shoot to kill wildebeests. Lifeless bodies in the meadows decompose. Stench of rotting carrion blows from the east. No sign of life near the watering hole. Out from the from soot, sand, and soil comes a stampede of fierce freedom riders ready to impose, fighting to end humanity's greed. Bullets fly by, blind like merciless moles. Across the sky, majestic eagles fly free, avoiding ascending explosive blows. But for big game and wild horses, it's too late to flee. Nowhere left for innocent creatures to roam. Herds of wild animals are left weeping for fire, and hunters destroyed their home. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the stampede into freedom. I can remember reading the buffalo here once roamed as one very large herd, some 40 million strong, and you could hear the thundering hooves from Texas all the way up to Canada. That's how large the herd was. So at one point, that the notation was wiping out the buffalo to take away the food for the Indians, and they used the train. I sat there on the train with a buffalo guns shooting down, just taking the hides and leaving the corpses to rot on the ground, much the same way you get this around watering hole. You find this across the globe. And then there's that note here, it's a big game hunt, wild horses, the idea of going out into the recesses of the world and finding that one wall hanger that you haven't got, that one head that you must need, and the back end hits at that idea of the rise of the animals once more, so to speak. Kind of like the that note to the battle for the planet of the apes.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. That is a great comment because yeah, I remember reading the same kind of stuff about you know how huge the herds of buffalo used to be and how you know the Native Americans would just use every part of the buffalo and then you know it became the you know the settlers came and it a lot of it became about you know just using it to get the hide or even just the horns or you know and rotting carcasses were left behind. Really cool comment there.
Once you could they got pictures of the bodies and the pelts, and you've got the pelts stacked from 20 feet high. That's how many they'd on a day train ride, they'd go out and kill a few hundred at a clip.
Yep, exactly. And yeah, it all was because of greed. And, you know, sadly, throughout history, many animals that have come close to extinction were done so because they were overhunted. Those pictures of when you see the hides stacked up or the dead rotting corpse
horns of the buffalo, it really is a symbolism of the greed of that time. So absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, Rex. Very cool. And Faisy. Oh, I guess Faisy had to go. So, all right. Well, have a good night, Faisy. Thank you so much for calling in. And what do we have next, Rex?
Summon the Hunt Within by Al Good. Invasion falls grim over our sacred land, like blankets of searing lamenting snow. Upon our black forest of ancient Gaul, oh, how we burn with icy vengeance. Rally, warriors, raise your shield and sword, warm yourselves in blood-drawn divine fury. The Valkyrie lay Pegasus trails in the frost, follow golden footprints toward counterattack. Our morning hearts' raging war drum sink with our foaming destroyer's gates, pounding seismic berserker pulses in gouts of crimson raids. With cracks of snap leather, sheet songs of drawn metal, a courageous battle hymnal to our Asgard kings, embody the mythos that of charge of the storm to smash enemy lines of cravening meat. Gods are watching. Unleash your brunt, claim your honor, free your wild hunt. Ride the light in the chase of our prey, we crash as a tide. Fly, lead the night, with dusk in our hand, we black out the sky. Wrap the invaders from our farmland fields, run them down and through as harvest yields. Return ruin to them threefold and unkind, repaid for debts of slaughter designed. Summon the hunt within and take flight. Odin leads the immortal way, and those that fall bravely in our fight, Valhalla welcomes you this day. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. Very cool, right? Very cool, right? I liked the flow of this, the imagery, the metaphor. I like the reference to the Black Forest of ancient Gaul, which would have been a reference to the Black Forest of modern Germany. The Gaul I was reading is a region of Western Europe first clearly described by the Romans, encompassing present-day France, Belgium, Luxembourg, and parts of Switzerland, the Netherlands, Germany, and northern Italy. So really a great historical reference there. And I like how he mentions the ancient Gauls, which I think are oftentimes referenced as being a type of ancient Germanic tribe. But then he also goes into the mention of the Valkyries and Asgard and Valhalla, references to the nomadic Viking mythology, and I thought that was really, really cool. I mean, and great word choices here. I like where he brings it into with all the senses, like you can hear the wild hunt. It's like we are, Faisy and I were talking about earlier, oftentimes the wild hunt was connected with storms because it was, you know, people's way of explaining the noise and the sights and the sound of a storm. And so it would have been considered something. And oftentimes it was something that wasn't seen, but rather just heard. And so I really feel like he does bring in that sense of witnessing the wild hunt through the sounds that one hears. With our morning hearts, raging war drums sync with our foaming destrier's gate, pounding seismic berserker pulses and gouts of crimson raids. With cracks of snapped leather, sheath songs of drawn metal, a courageous battle hymnal to our Asgard kings. I also like that that part there speaks on the idea of not only the mythology, like this poem doesn't just speak on the mythology of the Wild Hunt, it speaks on the reality of many ancient cultures where, you know, proving oneself in war and battle or surviving war and battle was, you know, a tradition passed from generation to generation. And then when it says, summon the hunt within and take flight, Odin leads the immortal way, and those that fall bravely in our fight, Valhalla welcomes you this day. What a great ending line, speaking on the reward that the warrior gets for dying in battle, for serving Odin in battle. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It reminds me of the Lost Roman Legion from about 120. That was fully decimated. The entire legion just disappeared from the record, and it was thought to have disappeared in Gaul at the hands of the Germanic tribes, because they were still pushing on the Germanic tribes, even though they had some Germanic peoples as part of the legions themselves. It said that the peoples who knew the land took refuge in the forest, when they knew the forest, and the legion entered into the forest and went deep. They started taking out the back end and moving up forward, and fully destroyed the entire legion itself. That's something like 5,000-6,000 men, something like that. And these are highly trained troops, as opposed to the people that they were fighting at the time. But they did use the landscape towards their to their benefit. And this kind of covers that note too. The sort of Whitcraft snap leather, you hit that, the sort of horses, and they wouldn't have been much help in a forest, because the forest back then was thick and viscous and didn't allow for a whole lot of sunlight, but boy, did they have a lot of places to hide within. Don't embody the mythos. Let us charge the storm to smash enemy lines of cravening meat. And yes, at that point in time, there would have been nothing left but meat, because they would have taken the helmets, anything that could be used to help benefit them. They would have taken the shields, the swords, you name it, the scabbards, the knives, anything. And the idea on the back end with the thought to the Valkyrie, rise, snuff the light, now chase the prey, we crash the tide, fly, leave the night with dusk in our hands, we black out the sky, and then that note to finish with summon the hump within and take flight, Odin leads the immortal way, and those that fall bravely in our fight, Valhalla welcomes you this day. Home of those brave warriors who fall in battle, and then are taken by those Valkyrie to forever dine at the table of Odin and drink mead and tell of their death.
Absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't mind sitting at the table of Odin and drinking some mead. But I liked your comment there, Rex, because it had a lot of great references and information. So very cool. All right. And what do we got next?
We got Haunted Hunt by Eric Svensson.
All right. And we have a SoundCloud for this. So here we go.
Haunted Hunt. Torque wrench twists, thunder blunder hooves, winter blizzards unleash trapped desires, blighty, almighty. Reality's polarized, shift-shaped knells, dells with glazier determination dung. Country folk hour, hovel, hush, hush, blighty, almighty. Flint sparks fly awry, ignite the night. Full moon burn makes the hunt surreal, blighty, almighty. Luminosity sheds sinister glows, blow by blow. Spectral horses steeplechase, wild-eyed Norsemen cuss and curse. Almighty blighted, trajectory of mangled, mashed angles, hound bay away, foam sprays with each snap, snarl, yap. Almighty blighted. King Volma, uncrowned by death, rides again. Viking spirit ricochets, rejects rigor mortis. Mighty stag to be conquered on this hunt. Almighty, blighted. Ranted pants rave, erase graves. Raspy lungs slurp, blizzard slosh. Catch the fair mascot maiden ahead. Shudder, shock, elements cower. Country folk tremble, jittery hands sign the cross. Shove more kindle on the fire. Shudder, shock, elements cower. Rook, ravens and buzzards call more pull. Horses whose flint sparks the night, bloodshot eyes scream demented hunger. Behold, the stag becomes the lamb. Valleys vanquished by King Volma, mountain cliffs shudder. Stag gags as arrows pierce. Behold, from the pierced lamb's side, blood flows. Merciless, murderous hunt rips open the night. Blood sport lust unleashes trapped demons. Full moon turns blood red. Mother of God, have mercy on our souls. Wind lashes crush. Spectral bodies smash apart, only to regroup miraculously. Helter-skelter night skulls unbelief. Ever onwards through damnation's darkened witches ride on wild warlocks, macabre underworld fest. Above ground, country folk stagger, confuse. Beware the tombs of Viking kings, let coffins containeth not, restraineth not such fierce, fiery temperament. Thou shalt never restrain divine right of kings and queens. For once upon a time, in merry mood King Volma sat, forgetful of his power, as idle as the goose of gold that brooded on his tower. Throughout thunder blunder hunt he screams, O death, where art thou, victory, end of.
Bravo, Eric. Thank you for that, SoundCloud. Great read and write there, especially considering how long and epic the poem was. And thank you for the SoundCloud. Just a reminder, everyone,
If you're unable to call in, then the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, your thoughts on Eric's poem?
Well, it is the haunted hunt, so to speak. So it's that which one can imagine from the picture itself, or one that you can imagine reading from the pages of history. Country folk, cower, hovel, hush, hush, blight the almighty. Flint, sparks, fly, awry, night, the sky, full moon, boon, makes the hunt surreal. Nice touch of that. I like that. Then luminosity sheds sinister glows, blow by blow, spectral horses steeplechase, while thy Norseman cuss and curse, almighty blighted. The thought there, spectral horses steeplechase, that does hit to a note to a hunter, fox hunt there, but you got wild eyed Norseman, so you're looking at the Vikings raiding. Almighty blighted walks at that note that they had their own gods, and it took quite a while before they integrated into the Christian angle later on in their years. King Volmer, I don't know the full story, but that piece at the bottom of Eric reads into, in merry mood, King Volmer sat, forgetful of his power, as idle as the goose of gold that brooded on his tower. That comes from a story or a poem about that. Let's see what else we got. Catch the fair mascot maiden ahead, shudder, shock, elementals, cower. Elementals can hit the notion of earth, wind, fire, air, wind, fire, earth, and something else. Not going to think of it. But anyway, the elementals, earth elementals. Again, country folk tremble, jittering hands sign the cross, shove more kindle on the fire, shudder, shock, elementals, cow. Fear in the moment, because they have no real understanding, because these guys fight and take. It's the idea of plundering. Behold, the stag becomes the lamb, leading them to slaughter. What else we got there? Behold, from the pierced lamb's side, blood flows. A note to Christ on the cross. Merciless murder hunt rips open the night. There's a kind of duality in that. You hit the idea of not just the battle itself, but the hunt offers up that note of the horns playing, people cheering, and the fox hunt is on, so to speak. Blood sport, lust unleashes trapped demons. Full moon turns blood red. Mother of God, have mercy on our souls. The prayers. Let's see. Ever onwards through damnation's dark and domination, witches ride on wild warlocks, macabre underworld feast above ground, country folk dagger confused. That note to, you've never seen anything like this, and the horde is just riding over you. I like the bottom end of this. Beware the tombs of Viking kings. Let coffins contain it not. Restrain it not such fierce, fiery temperament. Thou shalt never retain, restrain divine rights of kings and queens. And that is the idea of they thought at that time that it was their divine right. The land was all theirs. The people were theirs. And it was their divine right to see and do as they saw fit.
I like that. I like that. Very cool observations there. And, yeah, the only thing I know is that King Volmar is a dwarf king in Germanic mythology. And though I hadn't heard it before, I kind of figured that that must have been from either a song or a story or something, because of the fact that not only is it in quotes, but Eric got a really sing-song, tone to his voice. I really liked the imagery and metaphors in this. And, it's a great epic piece. And there's just, some topics I think call for epic rites. And the Wild Hunt is definitely one of those. I like the spiritual and religious references in this and how it does speak on that idea of the transition from the old religions to the newer religion of Christianity and the fight that often went on between them. And I like how he transitions from Blighty Almighty to Almighty Blighted, that idea that of a God going from one who is doing the blighting, you know, throwing the lightning, you know, punishing humankind, to one who is blighted themselves, the idea of a religion wiped away by a mankind or by new traditions within history. I really liked how he told a story of in this and how he shows the fear of the people. When he says, country folk tremble, jittery hands sign the cross, shove more kindle on the fire, shudder, shock, elementals cower. I like how that speaks on the idea of how in ancient times there was that fear of the elements, and understandably so, you know, snowstorms, storms, hurricanes, what, you know, those forces of nature that would oftentimes bring that fear, and because of the destruction and death that they brought to mankind. Then I like where where he says, behold, the stag becomes the lamb, because that's that reference again to the ancient religion of the worshiping of the stag, of Odin, or the huntress, like there is the huntress goddess is oftentimes associated with the stag. It becomes the lamb, which is a representative of Christ. And all the way through, there's brilliant imagery and metaphors, great storytelling. And I like how, again, the references at the end to O Death, Where Art Thou Victory is another reference to a poem, O Death, Where Art Thou Victory? Where Art Thou Sting? It might not be a poem, but I know it's in literature. I like how it speaks on the idea of a death in battle that has, at least this is what it says to me, a death in battle that offers up that reward for the warrior. Excellent right and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
An Owl Sonata, number 21 by Jack Blue. That's yours.
All right. Traveling the dreamy hell, I found myself adrift or dead inside the purple maze of snow, when a frozen double bass staggered to the ghost of love, or something like a dissonance. A blizzard of rejected souls whirling through the wilderness of howls, grumbles, and refrains reverberated violently to be fading into snow, as if all was nonsense now. The ruins of celestial walls with the aura's awful ashes fell around the glacial ground, where a ghost of majesty appeared to be chasing curses or reminiscence of demons. Through the eternal emptiness, the shadow mirroring the pride of some kingdom underground lingered on the snowy hell, and I heard an ancient hymn from another universe. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
An owl's life. no, an owl's sonata. It does hit up because owls are thought upon as different things from those that deliver messages to being harbingers to being wise, and those that they are the ones that can do the full head rotation 180 degrees, and they have eyes that can see well enough into the dark to do all their hunting. Yet, through those eyes, they see more. They see through history, because that's what he's offering up here. Ruins of celestial walls, where a ghost of majesty appeared to be chasing curses or reminiscences of demons. And through eternal emptiness, the shadow mirroring the pride of some kingdom underground, lingering on the snowy hell. And I heard an ancient hymn from another universe. The idea of owls have always been seen as something a bit more than what they appear to be, even though for most, they never get to see owls at all.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, there is a mystery to owls, and oftentimes they are seen in mythology as representatives of messengers of death, although they have also been seen as, connected with the mythology of wisdom. And so, yeah, I like that he brings the owls in here, which are that, represent the nighttime or the darkness, and they're so silent when they fly that you almost can see them being a figure that represents the human spirit, the human ghost. Really great lines in here, wonderful imagery throughout. I really like the ruins of celestial walls with the aura's awful ashes fell around the glacial ground where a ghost of majesty appeared to be chasing curses or reminiscences of demons. And I thought that had a really great mythological feel to it. The idea of the dying stars and the idea of the sunlight burning people to ash, the references to hell and to demons in here was great, especially when he said lingered on the snowy hell, and then before that he had references of howls, grumbles, and refrains reverberated violently to be fading into snow. I like that how he makes me think about the idea that so many creatures and monsters throughout history and in different cultures where winter was a big part of the area they lived in, I like how he makes me think of those ideas that those mythological creatures and monsters that are a part of winter, and those stories that grow when, one has nothing to do but to sit around the fire telling stories and trying to understand the death and the violence that is oftentimes part of winter. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Riding Under the Moonless Sun by Cedar Chapman. And says you got a SoundCloud.
Yep, we sure do. So here we go.
Riding Under the Moonless Sun by Cedar Chapman. Beneath the slate sky's writing scar, thunder crawls its unrest. Lightning cleaves the mountains, hiding behind dark clouds. A wraith hunter rides his steed. Amber eyes highlight sunken cheekbones chiseled on his face. His cloak fluttering against the patter of icy nails of rain. His stallion pounds the earth. Steel shoes clop against cobblestone, shaking the ground as a ghostly mist unfurls from its nostrils, fumigating humanity. Obsidian demon dogs glide through the wind. Their teeth glisten like polished daggers, tongue thrashing left and right, ravishing the raindrops that bleed from the midnight sky. The hunt must go on. for that is what the hunter endures, galloping through wood grasslands, intertwined with the primal dance of predator and prey, searching for priceless prize game under a moonless sun, never able to feel a tangerine sky or brush his face against a maiden's porcelain bosom, just writing and writing, forever.
Wonderful reading right there, Cedar. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. This is a brilliant storytelling, right? Wonderful dark imagery, great word choices. If you look at the picture that's attached to the poem, it's really a great take on that prompt, and you can see a lot of inspiration taken from the prompt, but at the same time, with the way that he paints with his words, it's a poem that's able to stand on its own. I have to first jump to the ending and say I really like how he brings forth the idea of the sympathy that, this feeling of sympathy for this wraith hunter, this idea of someone who's so trapped in this eternal night, whose entire job is to kill and chase and hunt beneath the moon and in the cold darkness of night, that they will never able to feel a tangerine sky or brush his face against a maiden's porcelain bosom, just riding and riding forever. And so it gives you that idea of that this is the eternal punishment. It is the mythology of someone who basically has to go around collecting souls or collecting bodies for the devil. It's like that one with the, I forget what it's called, but the movie with the Ghost Rider or something like that, I think it is, with where he rides on a motorcycle and collects souls for the devil. It kind of reminds me of that. And great lines all the way through, but another part that really stood out to me was his stallion pounds the earth, steel shoes clop against cobblestone, shaking the ground as a ghostly mist unfurls from its nostrils, fumigating humanity. I thought, connecting the mist with the idea of like a deadly gas and using the word fumigating with humanity, I thought, what a great way to add that extra layer of darkness to the rite, and the idea that he isn't just going around, picking up people who have died naturally. This is the idea of humanity being eradicated, humanity being punished. At least that's how I read it. And then, of course, we have the idea that at the end that it's also his punishment, his eternal suffering. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It is a perfect note to the picture. That first stanza is the opening note to the background, the slate sky, the thunder growl, the lightning cleave, hiding behind dark clouds. And then the hunter rides upon his steed, ember eyes highlight sunken cheekbones, chiseled on his face, his cloak fluttering against the patter of icy nails of rain. And then he hits on the note to his stallion. And then the obsidian demon dogs knife through the wind. So he's taken each particular piece of that picture and he's given it its own little stanza, walking itself piece by piece until that final one offers up a little bit more length to it and gives a touch of melancholy to the person itself. But it also reminds me of, what's his name, the Headless Horseman
from
Sleepy Hollow. The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Because he does the very same thing. He goes hunting and he cleaves souls. The hunt forever endures.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. Great observation there, especially on the connection with the Headless Horseman of Sleepy Hollow. The interesting thing about the Headless Horseman is there's actually several cultures and you know, nationalities throughout history that have Headless Horsemen in their mythology. So very cool, Ed. All right, and what do we have next?
Leave me to conjure the worst, my liquid mind forever. Is it I who will die on the battlefield of infamy? Polygamy entreats me to desecrate, isolate the scanty lies placed in between pork thighs of calumny. The boon of maroons cocooned as we fornicate and wait. Can fatty portions or potions satiate ill-bird slurs? Emaciated curs who conjure to conjure each rape against the nape of a gape, climbing the arc of hers, death's arch of triumph, as we gape like wildebeest apes. Seek to suffer no more at the feet of insurrection. What protection can demons or gods proffer from penance? Our comeuppance lies like patina on copper coins of dereliction, our predilection, infection without sentient patience. Scream into the abyss, where worms squirm, scrambling out from rot. This is most often forgot when besought in the cauldron of woe-begot. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. Let's see. As always, Liquid Mind Forever has just brilliant imagery and metaphors. I always enjoy and appreciate the way that she plays with words. Her word choices and her inner and end rhyme. I like that she starts this with a question. Is it I who will die on the battlefield of infamy? I think a question that asked throughout history of many warriors, some with the idea that it's something that they fear and many in the idea that it's something that they feel they are called to, you know, like the warriors who got the reward of Valhalla when they died. I also like the mention of polygamy because polygamy, you know, often was a part of many ancient cultures, you know, from biblical cultures to And oftentimes having more than one wife was done for political reasons or for, you know, reasons to connect one tribe to another. I also like the mention of the fatty portions or portions satiate ill-bred slurs. Can fatty portions or potions satiate ill-bred slurs? That idea of the wine and the fatty portions offered up to the gods, in which case the gods here would be representative of the mankind who head out in triumph and that fine line between, I feel like that whole stanza there, especially with death's arch of triumph as we gape like wildebeest apes, I thought spoke on that fine line between a warrior and, you know, that fine line between a warrior and I don't know if barbarian's the right word, but basically somebody who's lost all sense of pride. They're nothing more than like a drunkard. Simply bragging about what they once had. I also like that she has the references to the witches, the women, with the mention of the cauldron at the end, the penance. I like the mention of the idea that where she says, what protection can demons or gods proffer from penance? Our compensance lies like patina on copper coins of dereliction. That idea that we try to of paying to escape judgment, only to find that judgment comes either way. So powerful lines and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm going to go with this is more about today than yesteryear. The thought of calumny, the idea of trying to destroy someone with lies. I can see it. The scanty lies placed in between pork thighs and calumny, the boon of maroon cocoon as we fornicate and wait. The idea of both literal and metaphorical fornication there. And then can fatty portions of potions satiate ill-bred slurs? Again, that note to that walks in calumny as well. Emaciated curse who conjure to contour each rape against the nape of a gape, climbing the arc of hers, death's arch in triumph as we gape like wildebeest apes. The idea of the giraffe idea, you giraffe neck because you want to see what damage was done in the accident. The arc of hers kind of hits me up with the idea of how all of a sudden, it's a great thing to destroy women by replacing them with men. That idea that women aren't important anymore, just like men aren't important. Destruction of both the male and the female as themselves. The protection of what protection can we get from demons or gods, prophets, and penance? That note to religiousness and the idea of walking that note so prolifically that you walk yourselves into graves. I'll come up in slice like patina on copper coins of dereliction that implies the rust of society, our predilection, infection without sentient patience, the idea of we're letting this and them walk so easily through everything that it's just pure madness. There's no sentience there. There's no intelligence. And then at the infinite, you scream into the abyss where worms squirm, scrambling out from rot. This is most often forgot when besought in the cauldron of woe begot. The cauldron of woe begot us. Oh, woe be us. And we're not doing anything about it. And when besought, the thought of being drunk in the moment, and it is the idea of repeating history because we have forgotten what history is.
I like that. Very cool observation, especially on the idea that we really oftentimes don't learn from history. So very cool. All right. Well, we will have carryovers. We'll have four carryovers from this contest, which is Silent Tree, Captain Kerr, and Grant G, and Dr. Human for Humanity. And then, of course, I'll have all the rights that were in the last day of Pompeii contest. So I don't think I'll even need to run another dark contest. I can just do those and some maybe open darkness for the next Echoes in the Dark show. So great show, Rex. I'm really glad that you woke up and called in. Thank you very much. Thank you, Faisy, for calling in. I really appreciate you. Thank you, Robbie, for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who's listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for all she does in the background. We truly appreciate you. And before the show ends, Rex, why don't you tell us what you have going on for your Sunday show, your contest?
Blacktop Mojo, band out of Texas. Good music.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, you can join us 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company tonight, and then 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time on Saturday. You can join Faisy on the
for part sinner, part saint. And make sure to keep an eye out on all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone. And have a good night, Rex.
Good night.